and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is one of an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Over the past 10 years, Richmond's cultural art scene has been quietly growing, attracting numerous talented artists with national and international reputations. Every week, on Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we're having lunch with Saul Becker. Saul, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tim.
Yeah. You're moving.
Yes.
Where are you going?
To New York City in 1 week.
Really?
Yeah.
Why are you leaving this lovely, lovely town?
It's sort of strange to be not from Richmond. And I think just, you know, part of being a student in college, everything feels kind of temporary.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For us, you know, for my wife and I, really home is back on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we never really felt like we were moving to Richmond. We were moving to VCU.
Right.
And I think throughout our time here, we've been discovering Richmond, you know, as a big sort of surprise.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us, we're just still on this path, and New York is kind of the next stop.
Well, the reason I invited you on was really to talk about motorcycles.
Oh.
You probably think this is an art show, but I think probably it's much more interesting to talk about motorcycles. So let's talk about motorcycles.
Perfect. My other passion.
What kind of motorcycle do you have?
Ducati Monster.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you going to take that to New York?
Yes. And I'm going to have to strap it to the biggest light pole I can find, I think.
Really? Make sure it's there when you get back.
Yeah.
Actually, in New York, that's not such a bad thing, you know, to have a motorcycle, I suppose.
Yeah. Jim Hyde was telling me that his trick is his license plate is fastened with Velcro,
uh-huh.
and so he just parks on the sidewalk and takes his plate in with him.
Oh, that's
so
not a bad idea.
If they can't read the plate, they can't give you a ticket.
Well, yeah, and also if somebody steals it, you can say it's the motorcycle without a license plate on it.
That would work.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Yeah, because that's what I thought. Well. Sort of all kidding aside, not really. Tell me a little bit about yourself, about your background. You know, what if you, maybe you can't, I don't know, but you know, why did you get interested in art?
I grew up with parents that were pretty creative. I remember, you know, coming home from like middle school, my mother was working on a parade float in the living room. You know, she was just...
Is that one of those stories where she got the float built and then you had to tear the roof off?
Exactly.
To
we had to tear out the front of the house. But no, my mother was a really hands-on person and always doing things. She was a potter, a carpenter, a painter. And so I just kind of grew up in that environment.
Right.
And it was just sort of natural that every weekend we were working on some sort of project. Up until I was, I think, 16, I thought she had painted... You know, she had done this copy of a Vermeer painting when she was in art school.
Right.
And I thought that was her painting. So when I first saw Vermeer in a textbook, I was surprised.
Wait, somebody's ripped off my mother and they did it in the 1500s.
Exactly. But, yeah, that's the environment I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always sort of doing odd jobs.
What was your dad doing? Was he just sort of wandering around in his boxer shorts drinking Budweiser?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
No, he
we
worked
won't,
in
we
insurance.
Won't let him hear this.
The insurance field wasn't that stimulating. So I think I was more interested in what my mother was doing.
Okay, so it was a couple of good options.
Yeah.
Living death and opportunity.
No, yeah, it was a clear choice.
Clear choice.
Now, one of my first jobs when I was a teenager was working on an army base in a graphic shop.
What a juxtaposition.
Yeah, it was very strange, but I was making like training posters and reproducing maps for the first Iraq war, and you know, I was working with a bunch of like crazy hippies on this army base, and it was a really,
really
interesting arts community. And then I think one of my next jobs was several years later was working on a tall ship as a sailor. And I just, you know, I grew up in the Northwest with this.
On a tall ship, meaning a ship with sails and...
Yeah, basically a pirate boat.
A pirate boat.
Yeah, it was the ship they used for Master and Commander.
Oh, really?
It was the boat I used to live on. And that was actually the first time I came to Virginia.
What were you doing on that boat?
I was teaching sailing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't know, it just seemed like in my family this was a pretty normal choice.
Right.
Just to run off and join off a pirate ship.
And run off to sea. Isn't that what they call it?
Exactly.
Something like that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and after that, I was a boat builder for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And so it seems like, you know, when I look back, you know, through my past, everything I've always done has been, like, sort of hands-on and kind of creative things. So it seemed natural to me.
So why painting instead of sculpture?
Yeah, that's funny. I was working, you know, with the movie sets last summer, and almost everybody that was working carpentry was a sculptor.
Right.
And they were really surprised that I
was a 2D
artist. It was for John Adams. It was a movie HBO was working on.
Right, okay.
And they kept asking me, you know, if you're so handy, why are you a painter? And
right.
I don't know. I guess I think my paintings are really, you know, the images are built. They're layered in a very distinct way. And I guess I look at that a little bit like construction. And, you know, paintings are very tactile and very handmade. Very
right.
Probably the most handmade thing you could possibly make.
Yeah, I mean, there's really... The only tool between you and that canvas is a brush.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're using screwdrivers.
No.
I mean, I guess you could.
Some people do.
Some people do. Putty knives, you know, whatever. Whatever you can get your hands on. So what about undergraduate school? What did you do?
I went to the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of a natural outgrowth of the time I spent on the tall ship. We actually sailed between Virginia and Nova Scotia. And when I got to Nova Scotia, I fell in love with Halifax.
Really? Yeah.
And they had a really great art school. And I had gone off to college and then dropped out after a semester and decided to take some time off. And that's when I got the wild hair to go sailing.
Right.
And when I was ready to go back, you know, we were sailing into Halifax and I found this great school up there.
Wow.
And my wife.
Yeah.
And so we stayed in Halifax for
a while. Is she from Nova Scotia?
She grew up in Nova Scotia.
Oh, she
did. She was born in Toronto.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, your wife is the only person I know that can do a really impressive impression of a fish.
Yeah, it doesn't work very well on the radio, but
no,
it's a really good
one. Could you do it for us? No. Oh, that's great. That's really amazing.
That was a West Coast sockeye.
Actually, I'd ask her to be here, but she's in New York, so and it really is impossible to do over the telephone. But I think we probably could have done it on radio, you know, or maybe not, you know. All right, so as far as schooling goes,
mm-hmm.
When you left school in Nova Scotia, what happened next?
I took 4 years off.
Really?
And my wife and I moved back to Seattle, where I was from.
Uh-huh.
And just spent some time working in the arts and, you know, getting my feet wet. I mm-hmm. felt like it was really important to be out in the world before going back to get a master's.
Right.
You know, to show and to struggle and to, you know, get rejected and to work a crappy full-time job and make mm-hmm. art at night. And just to know that you needed to make art to be sane.
Right.
Was important.
Talk about that a little bit.
I think it's just a really important...
I mean, what is that? Because I think a lot of people listening... Mm-hmm. Well, maybe a lot of them do, but I think a lot probably don't understand that. But
yeah, well, I think it's easy to make art in school because there's a whole support structure.
Right.
There's an armature. There's people who understand the value of art and will argue for the value of art
mm-hmm.
and will encourage you to make it. And then when you don't have that structure, you know, a lot of people just stop making it
mm-hmm.
because it's. Their drive to make it is.
But what about the sane part or the? Can you talk about that or? I mean, did you mean that literally or?
No, not literally, but you know.
Do you mean more in terms of making relevance out of your life or?
Sure, making relevance out of your life or just sort of getting an outlet for the complexity of emotions that we all have.
Uh-huh.
We have, you know, 7 or 8 words for really strong emotions, but I think what we experience throughout our lives is really like a very fine trembling between those emotions. You know,
how does that come through in your work, you think?
It's tough to say, but for me, I think it's a mixing of emotions, you know, making something that's beautiful and a little sad and a little, you know, exciting and, you know, looks a little dangerous or all these things together are emotions that, you know, are complex and sort of like a remix of familiar emotions. And I think our lives are full of these, you know, spillings over of emotions. And it's good to validate that.
Are you cognizant of that while you're painting? I mean, when you go to paint, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that process at all? I mean, is it a process where you arrive and you have an idea, or is it a process when you arrive and then the idea arrives later, or there is no idea, it's just you and the painting, and who knows how it happens, and all of the above, none of the above?
That's a combination of all those things. You know, I think a lot of the time the process has nothing to do with paint and nothing to do with, you know, anything that you'll see a record of. Sometimes it's just the thinking of it or the thinking after it. You know, a lot of my ideas sometimes will come out in drawings that I'll make. They'll just, you know, I'll make a series of drawings and I'll keep thinking about certain things. And
can you give an example?
You know, there's a painting for my thesis show was a beach painting. And I've been really interested in landscape and doing a lot of these little sketches. And the way I find an image that really sort of captures my interest is I'll just, you know, sketch imaginary landscapes in my sketchbook. And I just found that I kept drawing the same place over and over again.
Right.
And it kept holding my interest and I kept wanting to work it out. And so that was a clue for me that I needed, you know, to work it out in a larger painting. Sometimes...
But what are you working out? See, what I'm getting at here is that, and what the show is about, why do people do this? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is this about? Because most people's impression of art is they either look at it and they go, well, that's pretty, or they look at it and, the, you know, the old famous line of, well, I could have done that.
Sure.
And so the idea is to try and sort of reveal to people, you know, why do people do this, you know? And maybe maybe it's not... Maybe we can't talk about it. I don't know. But that's kind of what I'm driving at here.
Well, it's difficult. You know, I think sometimes, you know, people will have really strong emotions and they'll hear a song that just somehow manages to wrap up the complexity of their emotional state at that point. And, you know, maybe it was a breakup, but, you know, they're a little bit relieved but really sad and don't know where to go. And somehow that song just completely made them feel... like on alone, like somebody else was feeling the exact same thing and it was totally normal.
And so...
So I think in a way...
So visually that happens for you?
I think visually that happens for me. I paint scenes that sort of... I feel like they reveal some sort of truth about, you know, the way I'm feeling and the way contemporary life is and the way, you know, we experience the world.
Because that's interesting because we were looking at some of your work... And, you know, there's, the, as you said, they seem to be around landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one with you almost like looking through some tree limbs, standing on the edge of a, looked like it might have been a lake with a moon in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And in and of itself, it's a beautiful image, just the image. I mean, there, I think what you're talking about, and I've had this conversation with other artists, when it works, there's something that transcends the work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's do you know what that's about? What is that? Is that, how do you tell when you've gotten it? Can you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's dumb luck and persistence and
Yeah,
who knows when it happens. I think, you know, you could sit around and wait for it to happen all your life and it doesn't and then it just sort of doesn't.
Are you doing this for yourself? Are you doing this for the viewer? Are you...
Well, it's a combination of all those things. I mean, I think...
Saul, why are you doing this?
Because I can't.
And why don't you stop?
Not. Yeah, it'd be much easier if I didn't have to do this.
Would it be?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It would be.
Just what does that mean?
Work a 40-hour job.
Yeah.
Come home, watch TV.
Yeah.
Drink a few beers. I just... I don't know. I need to do something else.
That's interesting.
I need to make something.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't know if it... I don't know if... Do you think everybody can make art?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I don't... Maybe.
Because most people will say, well, I can't draw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know a lot of artists who can't draw.
Sure.
I mean, you know, that's a whole different set of skills than making art.
Necessary.
Why is that not necessary?
It doesn't have to be necessary. People make sound art. People make any other kind of art. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they really, you know, have to have a drive. They have to have a need. Maybe they have to have a chip on their shoulder or something to talk about.
Right.
But I think a lot of people just do want to express something. And I hate that word.
Yeah.
You know, that phrase, like, just express yourself. But
right.
I mean, there is something.
Because there's a lot of ways to express yourself.
Sure.
I mean, I think that the whole concept of, you know, oh, artists, oh, they're the creative people.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're the crazy people. You know, one, the people that I know that are artists are disciplined, hardworking, and focused, the ones that are any good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certainly many ways, many, many, many ways, I think, to be creative. Yeah. I mean, I know people in business who are enormously creative. So I don't know that it's just about, you know, well, I'm so creative. It's something else. I don't know if we can get to it, you know, what that is. But you mentioned sound art, and I know you've been working with Steve Vitello. You want to talk about that? Tell him about Steve.
Yeah, Steven's a sound artist based in Richmond, and he's originally from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, I started working for him over the last year and a half, and I've had a lot of experience as a installing artwork. I worked for a couple of years in Seattle as an art installer.
Right.
And just sort of, you know, being like a handy, tactile person, it's been a really great partnership in that, you know, sometimes he needs help, you know, installing his exhibitions, and mm-hmm. Will take me along. And a lot of times that's entailed travel. And so, you know, working for him.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been really nice. He sent me to Norway.
So what do you think of sound art? I mean, most people, you tell them that somebody's a sound artist,
mm-hmm.
and they go, oh, come on. What do you mean he's a sound artist? You know? Talk about a little bit about specifically what kinds of things you've done with him.
Mostly what I've done with him is hang speakers, which, you know, being a sound artist, you need a lot of speakers.
Yeah, right.
But sometimes his work doesn't involve audible sound.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the speakers will be just a visual component,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they'll have subsonic sound going through them so that, you'll see the speakers moving, but you
right.
won't hear anything.
Does his work interest you at all?
Yeah,
it does.
Quite a bit. It's,
why?
It's very different from my own practice.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy for me to lend my sort of creative
uh-huh.
energy to his projects.
Right.
I think if he was another painter, it would be, you know, more difficult because I would feel more a drain on my own
mm-hmm.
sort of creative process. But because our disciplines are so different, it's just been really great to be around him and to see his
That's
process.
Right. Okay, so you're going to New York.
Uh-huh.
I know this sounds like an obvious question, but why?
It's just the art world there is so vibrant, and there's so much of everything.
Right.
You know, any day of the week, there's, you know, hundreds of shows
uh-huh.
to go see, and, you know, some of the most important or famous work around, so many great museums. You know, being somebody who's really into art, it's
uh-huh.
just...
Who are you interested in? Which artists?
I'm really interested in Julie Mereau, who's mm-hmm. a painter right now, and I'm a big fan of Steven's work, and there's a lot of sculptors I'm really interested in.
Right.
Tom Sachs, you know, Charles Ray, a lot of great people.
How does that relate to your work?
You know, I think a lot of the work, regardless of the medium, can arrive at a very similar, you know, emotive response.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, whether it's a sculpture or a video, I think it can solicit the same kinds of feelings that a painting dealing with those same subjects could.
Right.
So it isn't really the medium that's communicating as much as, you know, that sort of invisible art which is emanating from it. And,
uh-huh.
you know, I'd like to think that you could get to the same effect in any media if you could manipulate it right.
What is that? Can you talk about that?
I
know that's an unfair question. I know.
It's a very unfair question.
I'm sorry. Talk about...
It would have been horrible
talk
if
about...
I had a really good answer for you.
Well, Tim, actually, the...
factors indicate.
The unspoken... So that's interesting. So you are spending a part of your life exploring... sifting through, trying to give form to, and you've used the word emotion about five times,
mm-hmm.
emotion, that ultimately shares with other people something very sort of private and personal and ultimately sort of almost undescribable. Is yeah. that is that about right?
That sounds pretty good.
Okay, we're done. Okay, folks, you got it? That's what it's about. Go out and get yourself a painting set and go for it, you know?
Yeah. And I don't even know if emotion is the right word.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's another what? There's another one of those invisible things that are emanating.
But it is it's a whole dimension of life, I yeah. think. It's like a fourth dimension.
Sure.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like this fourth dimension that's available to people. That takes a lot of hard work to get to. It's not, you know, it's not like I go in my studio to have fun, you yeah. know. I mean, it's just do you go in your studio to have fun?
No.
No. So it's
I
yeah.
don't, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it's
I mean, sometimes it's fun. Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun.
But it's something else. It's mm-hmm. not just about going in and painting pretty pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why isn't it about just painting pretty pictures?
Yeah.
Cuz you know so many people look at it and they go, you know, well, not your work, because actually your work is kind of pleasing to the eye. But so many people just don't understand that fourth dimension. They don't understand it's about more than making something pretty to hang over a couch. That's what they don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we've beaten that horse or not.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, and maybe that's not for everybody, and that's all right, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, maybe art isn't for everybody.
You know, I think...
Either doing it or looking at it.
Well, I think one of the problems with, you know, public and art is just that they don't see enough of it, that they think
True.
It's something that they need to have specialized knowledge of or need to be drug or, you know, like, overtly invited to the gallery and mm-hmm. or the museum, and I find over and over the people that don't know much about art and I encourage to just go see more and more of it, they start to have an opinion and they start to really get into it.
Right.
And you just have to build up a bank of experience to pull from it. You know, my wife was a professional dancer for a lot of years and I didn't know anything about dance, but after 10 years of going to performances,
right,
you know, I really have interest in it. I really can tell when something is really good and really different.
Yeah.
And I never took a class. I never took an appreciation,
right,
you know, course in it.
Never took a, right.
But there's just a buildup of experience and an interest.
I wonder why that is in our culture. I mean, you know, I've talked about this before, but I remember seeing, I can't remember who it was, but some great famous pianist who'd gone back to Russia to play. And he was playing in an auditorium, and the auditorium was filled with old people, young people, rich people, poor people, educated people, uneducated people. And a lot of the people had tears in their eyes. I mean, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I mean, are we culturally bankrupt here? I mean, you know, it's like art, it seems like the only time anybody pays any attention to art is when it's worth more than, you know, $10,000.
Yeah. And then it's just sort of a looky-loo approach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a different cultural history here, but I mean, I grew up in a really blue collar town where, you know, all my friends' dads were making hot rods in their
right
in their garages, and you know, they were so into their own little niche interests.
Yeah,
you know, and they had this incredible expertise, and it was a lot like any appreciation of art.
Was that? Do you think that was art like?
Yeah, I think it was very art like.
Yeah, interesting.
And
yeah.
So I think America really does have a lot of these wonderful, you know, niche interests.
Uh-huh.
And but it's just not crossed over.
It's just not hanging in a gallery somewhere.
It's just not hanging in a gallery.
And those hot rods are hard to hang in a gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's probably very true. I've said before, joking on this program, that what'll happen 100, 200 years from now is they'll look back on our culture, and the only thing anybody will ever be interested in looking at about our culture are our 30-second television commercials that can, yeah, you know, shape your life, shape your attitudes, make you cry in 15 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
Powerful medium. And I don't, you know, I don't know if that's, certainly some of the best and brightest are doing that, but it's missing that other fourth dimension we were talking about,
yeah.
I think. I mean, it's art-like, but it doesn't take you to that other place.
Yeah, it's like junk food.
Yeah, candy. Exactly.
It's
yeah.
sort of, it seems to hit all the notes. without any of the sustenance.
Yeah, exactly. That's well said. Yeah. But we would never say that about your work, right?
No.
But you were talking before, interestingly, and I think that's true. You were talking before that for an artist to be successful takes a myriad of skills.
Yeah. Yeah, you really have to be a photographer and a carpenter and a framer, a marketer. You have to be a web guru. You have to have all these skills.
Right.
You have to be sort of a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah. And you've got a website. And what is it?
Saulbecker.com.
How do you spell it?
SaulBecker.com.
.com.
And that's getting a facelift, so go to it in like 2 months.
In 2 months?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's
all you folks write it down and go to it in 2 months.
Yeah. But there's a show up at Reynolds Gallery right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Reynolds Gallery is on Main Street.
Yep.
And I think most people would know, where that is. Well, what do you think about where you're headed in the future with your work, or is it a...
Yeah, a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
What do you think about? Nothing, I know.
I'm waiting for the rays to emanate. No,
if you're interested, there is smoke coming out of your ears at this moment, so...
It's the microphone malfunctioning.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think a lot about the future, and I think, for me, I think if there are professional bass fishermen in the world, there's certainly room for professional artists in the world. And so... I'm just looking for
that's great
for a way to make paintings full time.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think that's unreasonable.
No, I don't think it's unreasonable at all.
I'd certainly work more than 40 hours a week on it.
Uh-huh. What kind of work are you going to be doing in New York to stay alive?
I'm going to be working for Steven.
Oh, you are?
Some more.
Oh, okay, great.
I'm going to Cologne at the end of next month.
Uh-huh.
And then I think it's Mozart's 250th birthday in November in Vienna. And Steven and Julie Meritu are doing a collaborative project there, and I'm coming along for that.
Oh, great.
So I have a couple of these little gigs every couple of months, but I need to find something, some burgers to flip in the meantime.
Yeah.
To.
How does that affect you? Do you, in terms of American self-esteem, right, does it ever bother you that you have to flip burgers or... be Steven's, we were joking around before the show, Steven's boy. I mean, not that you're that at all. Steven's wonderful, and I'm sure he's a pleasure to work with. But what about all that? What about all, that? Isn't there a great looming fear in there somewhere that you're going to end up in some little dump of apartment in New York, having missed the boat?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm talking about courage here.
Yeah, I kind of look at the past and the things that, that I've worked out. And, I'm sort of blindly naive and optimistic about the whole thing, which is a necessary part of the whole thing. But things have worked out really well, and I've worked really hard. So I have no reason to think that it would just all of a sudden implode on itself.
Right. Yeah.
And, there's obviously, a lot of doubt built into all that, but just enough to keep me on my edge.
Yeah.
So.
Because I think, I always come to this with everybody I talk to, but I think that artists and being an artist and having an artistic life does take a certain amount of courage. Because there are, and as we talked about, and you have to do it.
Yeah.
It's not like, I could just stop doing this. But it does take a certain amount of courage. And I think a lot of people out there, maybe part of the reason they don't ever pursue art is because they try to play it safe. I don't know if there is such an animal. I don't know if you can play it safe in life. But people try to get a job and try to get settled in and try to keep that and try to have some kind of routine.
Yeah.
So it almost seems like people who decide to do what you've decided to do, I don't know. I can't call it confidence because I know plenty of artists that don't have a lot of that, but it is an adventure. Do you see it as an adventure?
I definitely do. There was this saying on the ship that, when you're sailing very close to the edge of the wind and you're trying to keep the sails as full as possible,
right?
You're sailing full and by, and if you were to shift just a degree or two, the sails would collapse because you'd be off the wind. But the best wind is right on the edge, and so.
Well said.
Thanks.
That's great. We're going to end on that one. I think that's beautiful. Maybe I'll change the name of my show. What's it called?
Sailing Full and By.
sailing full and by. Yeah, that's great. All right. I want to thank those folks who've tuned into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. Look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12:30. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's indie radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And if you want to see Saul's work, once again, it's saulbecker.com, S-A-U-L-B-E-C-K-E-R.com. Is that right? Okay, great. Thanks. See you next week.